Good morning. Today is Wednesday, May the 19th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Supervisor in the 5th District, Mr. Steve Madrone. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian, and all your listeners at sea.
Oh, and you're booming in loud and clear out of the North, the Great North.
Greater Eureka.
Yeah, I don't know how you're defining that one, but we'll just kind of let that slide. All right.
You gotta be careful with the way you define things. I think that's analogy.
Absolutely. Are you ready for your question for this morning?
You bet.
All right. Here we go. Why are people in the public eye said to be in the limelight?
Well, shoot. I don't know. I could make a reference to composting privies and use of lime.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
All right.
Limelight.
Limelight refers to a system of lighting invented in 1825 by a British Army officer named Thomas Drummond. Drummond's light was referred to or called limelight because it was produced by burning a cylinder of lime, calcium oxide, in an oxyhydrogen flame. As the lime was oxidized by the flame, it produced an intense, bright light that could be directed into a beam by a glass lens. Drummond's light was originally used to make the distant survey stations more visible at night, but later it was used in lighthouses and for stage lighting. In the theater, it was used as a spotlight to direct the audience's attention to the most important activities taking place on stage. Performers in this light were said to be in the limelight. And when the expression passed into general usage, it meant anybody in the center of public attention. So there you go.
Well,
a little bit
Isn't
lengthy.
That what you do with talk shop is you put the limelight on things.
Yeah, we've got a lime drink here. That's with an I, not a Y. We're all safe.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So you want to talk a little bit this morning and bring folks up to speed about the water issues that are going on in the Klamath Basin? We're hearing it. National news has picked it up. Local and regional news has picked it up also. Boy, I remember 10, 12, 15 years ago, the dam was going to be gone, which would have eliminated the discussion entirely. But apparently things are not quite as smooth as we would like. So what's your current read on that situation, Steve?
Yeah, well, it's a big one, and it's not just the Klamath, as we know. It's up and down the whole state, or actually the whole West, all the way to Four Corners in Colorado and New Mexico. So we're experiencing very severe drought. On top of a low water year last year and on top of a number of low water years over the last 10 or 15 years. So pretty serious stuff. The Yurok tribe has declared a drought water emergency for obvious reasons. Salmon habitat and little young fish are dying, and unfortunately disease will probably take a lot of the adults when they come in late summer, fall. So it's not looking pretty, but these problems are happening all over the place. So we're all, you know, going to have to start collecting rainwater when it comes, because even if it only comes half of the year, we can certainly collect a whole lot of it. And so there's a lot of talk about trying to incentivize those kinds of things. But, you know, just to be clear on the Klamath, while there will be a number of dams coming down in the lower system, there's still a number of dams in the upper system as well. And so taking the dams down at the bottom will be a massive improvement on many levels for fisheries, et cetera, but it still will not solve all the problems in the Klamath with water and other things. Basically, we've over-adjudicated it and offered water to way too many people, and there's just not enough of the fish anymore. And, you know, it's a cultural basis for them. That's the base of their culture for Native tribes.
So with the farmers and the discussions we've been hearing in the news that they're not releasing downstream and that they're going to keep it for the farming interests, and I guess Modoc County is having some issues with Tule Lake and some of those areas. Is this going back on some of the arrangements that had already been negotiated, or is this a new level of potential discussion?
Well, it's contentious no matter what, you know, because like I said, we've over-allocated the water to too many uses, and when we get a number of dry years, it just simply isn't enough to solve all of those problems. So we've got some really big things to think about. The Department of Interior has a new person at the head, and she has been rolling back some of the previous arrangements that were made in regards to the water. You know, everybody in the basin is hoping to try and come together and work well together to try and satisfy all needs. But when there simply isn't enough water, it gets pretty difficult.
So the Interior Secretary is basically stepping over the arrangements and the agreements that had happened and is, devising a different division?
The new Secretary of Interior is actually trying to honor longstanding water rights with tribes. And that's creating some conflict because during the Trump administration, there were a number of edicts and executive orders and things that sort of took away a lot of the protections for the tribes and for the fisheries and stuff. And so it's an age-old battle. It started over 100 years ago when the Bureau of Reclamation started draining and diking the Upper Klamath Basin and changing how that system worked, which for thousands of years it worked quite well in producing an abundance of food via salmon. And so shifts were made. Things were drained, irrigated to grow potatoes and other things, and now that's just creating a real conundrum. So the current Secretary of Interior is actually trying to do a good job of protecting tribes and fisheries.
So it's fish over farmers right now? Is that kind of the simple read on that one?
Well, I don't like to put one versus or over the other. That's not the way I would put it.
Well, prioritize, perhaps?
Like I said, there's just simply not enough water to go around, and there probably won't be enough water for the farmers, and there definitely isn't enough water for the fish. So both sides, all issues are taking a big hit because there's just not enough water.
How does that play out this summer?
Disease, algae, high water temperatures, battles. Who knows what will happen up in the upper watershed with people turning gate valves open or closed. It's just a lot of stuff, and many of us in the community worked hard to try and encourage everybody to play nice in the sandbox and do their best to conserve water and make sure there was enough for the salmon while also trying to provide some assistance to the farmers. But, the salmon, you can't just make up for that with some money, whereas for farmers, perhaps you could provide them with assistance for their losses of not being able to grow crops this year. And in that way, maybe keep more water in the river for the fish. So there's a lot of talk about some buyouts, bailouts, and things like that. Nothing has happened yet.
Well, we'll talk about some of those options that are being considered when we come back. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone. Steve, some of the options that are out there, whether it's a buyout of the farmers or more subsidies, I mean, that kind of seems to be the way everything's going these days. If it's not a short term, what are you looking at? I mean, there's recreational uses up there as well as in the river system itself. There's the economic components as well as the river itself. And then there's the cultural. Everybody's got a little bit of the same thing going on. Is it too early to determine yet what the discussion points are going to be as this works through the next couple of years?
Well, yeah, long term we know that we're going to have to do something very different than what we're doing right now. Just to be clear, the dams that are proposed to be taken out have no relationship to irrigation. They simply do not provide water for farming. That's primarily the two dams up in the Klamath Basin, the upper watershed. So that's important to recognize. They're primarily there for energy production, and the bulk of that energy goes to southern Oregon. And it's been determined that the cost to provide fish ladders and do all the other things to mitigate for what the dams have caused would be far greater than any energy ever produced. And so that's a big reason why Berkshire Hathaway is, you know, agreeing to take down the dams and has been cooperating with everybody to do that, at least the lower Klamath dams. So that's already kind of worked out. But we've got a long way to go, not only in the Klamath, but all over the place to figure out how we're going to collect and store rainwater in ways that we can help our communities make it through this drought and future droughts. This may be a historic drought in regards to the last 100 and some years, but the geologic and tree chronology records show clearly that it's not unusual for California to experience long, extended drought periods. So this is not unusual. It's just that we weren't prepared for it, really, and rarely prepared very well for drought.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't think a lot of folks, there doesn't seem to be an inclination to look at some of the historicals just out of routineness. You know, it's something that's driven by an event such as this to kind of go backwards and then go, oh, okay, well, maybe 25 years ago, decisions should have been made a little bit differently. And that's okay to understand that. But from this point forward, you can't undo what's already been done, so to speak, with some of the populations and then everything that's been built up around that. So it's just a different ballgame, I guess, is the simplest way to think of it, huh?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, what we can do is start providing more incentives for the collection of rainwater, for instance. You know, if people are out there and they're concerned about having enough water to keep their garden, their orchard growing through the summer, or even to have backup fire protection at their home, you can install a 5,000-gallon storage tank on your property with no building permits. It's exempt under the Uniform Building Code, whether you live in a city or in the county. You can install one or multiple 5,000-gallon storage tanks or smaller and collect rainwater. And, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of roof from a one-inch rainstorm to fill up a lot of water storage for irrigation and for fire protection. You put a fire nozzle on it, and if there is a fire in your community, your neighborhood, bam, there's a big storage unit for the fire trucks to tap into and probably save your home.
Are those big green ones that we see on trailers?
Oh, well, there's big green ones, there's big black ones, there's lots of them. 5,000-gallon storage tanks, about a 10 or 12-foot diameter.
Okay.
So it doesn't take up a lot of room. And you can put, you know, some nice trellis and landscape around it so you don't have to look at it. And you plumb it so you collect rainwater off your roof, you know, because even in a drought like this winter we just had, there was substantial rain in January, February, and if you had a rainwater collection system, you could have filled all those up.
And this is
for your gardens as well as fire protection.
Yeah, this is not for drinking water. This is for
No, you can filter it and do all kinds of things to make it for drinking water, but this is really for gardening and fire protection, which then reduces the water you're taking out of the local creeks or rivers or whatever, you know. So it's a way for us to deal with drought. People living on, like, the Big Island in Hawaii, a lot of Pacific Island communities and many other places in the West have long learned that they have to collect rainwater when it comes in order to have the water for all kinds of uses.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a cistern concept.
Yeah, sure. Same idea, but that's underground, a cistern, and they're wonderful because then they stay cool and they're not in plastic. Often they're in some sort of a concrete tank in the ground.
Right, right. Now, is there opportunity on a large enough scale to assist some of the commercial users? I'm thinking the farmers and folks like that are, you know, the corn farmers and the wheat farmers, not necessarily the pot farmers, but some of the guys that have got acres and acres and acres. I mean, is this a viable option, or with others doing this practice, does that then leave them enough water to be able to do the potatoes and some of the stuff that you were referencing?
Right. Well, depending on what kind of crop you're trying to grow, there are lots of different variations on your practices. So, you know, on a massive commercial scale for potatoes, I couldn't answer that question. It's certainly not my expertise, but I can tell you that on smaller farms, one can create ponds, you know, swale collections to collect rainwater with clay linings. and things like that. You need to do a good job of building them so they don't blow out. I usually like to try and put two overflow systems in a pond so you never have your dam blow out and create all kinds of problems. But yeah. You can actually collect millions of gallons behind small impoundments if you do it properly.
And those don't require permits either?
No, those would require permits, grading permits,
okay,
and the like. So some things are exempt, like 5,000 gallons or less. Other things require permits. But, you know, in Humboldt County, one of the biggest agricultural industries now is cannabis. And a lot of people shifted their operations to wells because
right.
The state was being so intense on the regulations for stream diversions and things like that. It kind of incentivized everybody to move to wells. Wells are not currently regulated in the state of California, although there is movement towards regulating.
We'll talk about the wells and the situation that they have when we come back.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone, Humboldt County Supervisor. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, Baywood Golf and Country Club, Randall Sand and Gravel, and Humboldt Bay Bistro. Steve, before the break, you were talking about wells and how they're unregulated. And I know from last week, Michelle Bushnell was in. And she talked a little bit about some of the challenges that are going on with various property rights in general. Are water rights different than property rights?
Yes and no. I mean, most properties have water rights, but not all properties have water rights. So if you have a stream or a lake that you border on, it's called a riparian water right. California, we have two types of water rights, appropriated rights and riparian rights. And appropriated rights are, for instance, Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District collects water from the Mad River, and they appropriate it, have a permit to appropriate it, and utilize it in Eureka, Arcata, and places that are outside of the watershed. So in order to do that, you need an appropriated right. But if you're a landowner with property adjacent to or a stream or lake flows through your property, then you have a riparian right. And you need to file annual water use reports with the State Water Board. And sometimes you have to get a Department of Fish and Wildlife 1600 diversion permit. So you may or may not have water rights on your property. It really depends on the parcel. Everybody in California has the right to collect rainwater, right? So in Colorado, the entire state is an appropriated rights state. They don't have any riparian rights.
Oh, really?
So in Colorado, you cannot collect rainwater. It belongs to somebody else downstream.
That's interesting with so much of the rural nature of that state, kind of like our end of the state. You would think that that wouldn't have been a concern, but I suspect that as some of the metropolitan areas grew that didn't have water, they needed access to that.
Right. If you look at the settlement of Colorado, you'll see that it was predominantly settled by large mining and cattle interests.
Right.
And so they pretty quickly controlled the legislature and made sure that all water was appropriated. So we're very lucky in California to have a mixed rights state where we're able to collect rainwater. That's a good thing.
So as we look at the future in our area, more and more interest, obviously, for people relocating here. Are you supportive of the rurals doing the water collection process? I seem to recall somewhere that if you're taking water, let's say from I'm just going to grab the Eel River because it's not in your district, so it's neutral. out of the Eel, you can do that, let's say, December, January, February, or March, but after then, you know, other standards, other rules kick in. Are you thinking of something along those lines being employed throughout the county or throughout the North State?
Yeah, you know, when you think logically about this in the county, and particularly with cannabis and other things, if we can get people to collect water during the wet period, however they collect that, whether it's rainwater off a roof, rainwater off a slope that fills a pond, or maybe we're even pumping from a well, but it's in the wet season. There's an abundance of water around. Groundwater is recharged. And we're pumping from that well or that stream to fill tanks or ponds that then help us make it through the summer. That's a lot better than trying to pump that water out in the dry season, right? So, yeah, I think it's absolutely a piece of the puzzle for Humboldt County and others.
So you mentioned wells, and I know in the past wells have been a big concern in the southern part of the state also as some of the groundwater has been tapped into and the Colorado is doing this and doing that. Rights for property owners with the wells themselves, is that – I would think that that's a burgeoning area of new law and new case law being developed also.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are many areas in the Central Valley and in Phoenix, Arizona, and other places where the groundwater basins have been pumped down so low that the ground ends up subsiding. You know, there are places that have dropped 10, 15, 20 feet due to compaction and subsiding of the landmass because we pulled so much water out from the ground. And if you've got sewer lines that are running on a gravity flow system running through an area where the land is collapsing, you've got a real problem with gravity flow, right?
Right.
So
right.
There's some really serious consequences to overdrafting groundwater supplies. And, you know, in many of those cases, they're confined aquifers where there's a layer below and above. But in Humboldt County, we don't have confined aquifers. It's all pretty fractured geology.
Right, right.
And so it's complicated.
So as you look at this on a statewide perspective, you know, the L.A. Basin, there's not a lot of folks in some of the apartment buildings that have the ability to have water tanks. Do you see that there's going to be some more efforts in that part of the state to do this stuff or more pressure from them to grab the water out of the north end of the state and let's just say relocate it into their part of the state?
Well, all of those things are going to be at play all at the same time, no doubt about it. You know, you may know that Humboldt County in the 1950s when the dams were going in on the Trinity River was promised 50,000 acre feet minimum annually for downstream beneficial uses such as fisheries.
Right.
And so it took until just a few years ago for the federal government to actually validate that, in fact, Humboldt County does have that right. Now, what we're doing at Humboldt County is working with the Hoopaw tribe and the Yurok tribe to see if we can all come to agreement on how to use that water for the fisheries and to benefit them, and then all of us work together to make a call for that water. So this has been something that's been talked about for decades in Humboldt. When are we going to get our 50,000 acre feet? And we recently got a grant to put together all the data and information and present a scientific case for the use of that water to benefit the salmon. And we're working with the tribes to try and accomplish that.
I would suspect that that's going to come to fruition right about the same time all the PILT dollars are paid up in full. Just a thought.
Yeah, there you
just
go.
A thought. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, earlier this week, the governor came out with his edict that even though the feds are saying one thing and CDC is saying something else, and a lot of other states and jurisdictions in the country are relaxing standards, then California, he's sticking by the June 15th date for any significant movement. How does a county react to that kind of a situation? I know, you know, you've got your medical folks that are kind of in charge, but when you hear other areas are lessening up and their businesses are allowed to come back, and Humboldt County still is under, and California is still under this other interpretation, is there any wiggle room for the county at all?
Well, we can't do anything less restrictive than what the state guidelines are. We can be more restrictive, but we can't be less restrictive. So that's always been the case. And there is a lot of confusion right now, like there often is when you're transitioning from one phase to another. But, you know, the fact is that COVID is circulating broadly in our community still. And I'm vaccinated, and I highly encourage others to do so if they feel that, you know, they can make that happen. I certainly respect people's choices. But, you know, the more we get vaccinated, the more we'll be able to open up safely and do all of these things. So it's a real balancing act. You know, you've got the state guidelines that might say one thing, but then you've got Cal OSHA, which is state as well, saying another thing about masking and other things. So, you know, in a transition, it's often true that things aren't quite lined up.
Right.
That's kind of what we're seeing here.
Right. Well, and then you've got, you know, the scientific community, the CDC, and those folks saying one thing and others saying something else.
I mean, oh, yeah.
The lack of consistency is so frustrating, I think, for so many folks. You know, it's I guess it's just kind of a tough stead to be in. But you're not hearing that there's any successful pressures being put on the governor to fall in line with what many of the others are doing.
Well, I think recall is probably the big pressure, right?
Yeah, well, that's that's in the offing one way or the other. At least the vote is in the offing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. You know, a month and a half ago, everybody was screaming and trying to jump in front of each other to get in line for the vaccine, right? And now we're trying to convince the other half of the people to get it, and they're not lining up, you know, and stuff. So every week, every 2 weeks or so, this thing changes, you know, and what's a frustration 1 week suddenly disappears 2 weeks later, and now we're into a new set of frustrations. So it's been a tough haul. That's one thing we know for sure.
Yeah, well, and maybe that's part of the lesson that governmental entities can take also is be consistent. And we've heard about that decades, right, in planning and in building and in a bunch of other different departments. Whatever it is, be consistent. Be legal, but be consistent with that determination, whatever it is. And maybe that's part of the takeaway from this thing is whatever the decision is, whatever the five electeds determine for a department, do it right, and then do it consistently right.
Consistency is a real virtue, isn't it?
Well, and it seems to be novel, and that's, I think, part of it also, which is frustrating as well. And I don't know, you know, nobody's given me the crown or the scepter for a day, so I guess I really can't impose anything that way. But it doesn't seem like it would be that difficult to be able to at least explain if there are new interpretations, the justifications and the rationalization behind it, rather than just having things put into play.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, you would hope we'd use some novel things to fight a novel virus, right?
Yeah, or some consistent things to fight consistent issues. But that also seems to be as challenging sometimes, just to kind of get a sense of where things really are. Now, we are supposed to have a very strong tourist season this year. Is that a concern for you, or is that something that you're looking forward to?
You know, it's kind of like going out on a sunny day during a drought.
Yeah, exactly.
On one hand, you're loving the sun, but on the other hand, you're praying for rain. We always hope for a good, strong tourist economy, because it's what keeps a lot of people employed and provides that, you know, a lot of income to the county and our communities. But at the same time, if visitors are coming and not being respectful and overrunning communities, well, that's not so good either, right? So how do you attract the responsible visitor? You know, what is it? What have other communities learned about their advertising campaigns and who they're trying to attract to their community in regards to how those folks behave while they're here? That certainly became evident last year in Trinidad and some other places.
Right.
There.
Right.
Communities were being overrun, and people were parking and camping in the streets and getting up in the mornings and pissing in the streets and doing all kinds of inappropriate things, you know. So, well, we can't have that, right? So how do you deal with that? Well, Trinidad's passing a parking ordinance, you know, to try and deal with that.
Well, time certainly will tell how that one plays out. And speaking of time, we have run out of it. Thanks for coming by this morning.
Thank you.
All righty, Steve. Take her easy. See everybody tomorrow.
All right.